Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Siakam the slam! CJ the Brick, gone!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Strictly Hoops with CJ and Miles. Rate, review, and subscribe on the Raptors Over Everything podcast feed and also on YouTube.
Every button.
Every like button. And subscribe. Smash that like button.
Everyone. Push them, repost it, comment, all the stuff that people do on the internet. The only thing I really do on the internet is this, but all the stuff that you guys like to do on the internet, do that, and we will be greatly appreciative somehow.
You make music for the internet? You do?
So, not for the internet, but I put it on the internet.
But it gets published through the internet.
It does. So, music and this are the only things. So, things with the microphone are the only things I do on the internet. Let's just put it. Let's just make it. But, man, good to be back.
Check out high and lows.
My See? Fresco, anywhere you can find me. Let's do the shameless plug. Anywhere you can find music, I am on there.
There we go.
You want to play that. If you want to play some music, like, you don't have to, but if you like music, go ahead.
There it is.
And my Instagram, you can check out some videos. At Mass Fresco, everything. I'm still confused how nobody took that name. I'm so confused how, like, I go to like certain things and I'll type it in and it's like, oh, you can use. I'm still confused how it's not.
Because it's yours. Everyone knows.
And a person that did not speak Spanish when I got it and when I did it, like how it wasn't thought of by somebody whose Spanish was their first language to be like more fresh.
Yeah. And if you're watching on YouTube, yes, this is CJ in 8K, 12K, 39K.
Something, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Fujifilm 100S is what I'm using.
There you go.
I'm a Fujifilm guy. So, like, I know people, Canon, Nikon, like, I know it's a whole war with all that stuff, but I'm Fuji. XT30, XT5, GFX 100S, whatever. Like, I like all of that.
You got me looking like I'm from the 1960s right now.
Some people don't speak in Spanish too right now because they don't really mess with it. But it's cool. Like, you know, I just trying some stuff out.
Yeah. Try away. Grady Dick was trying some stuff out in Summer League.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he was.
It was some like he was shooting. He was shooting. But also we saw a lot of complimentary parts of his game. Oh, FYI. We're going to talk Grady. And Dennis Schroeder. Right.
Yeah. We're going to talk about basketball too. We're not just going to talk about
Grady and Dennis Schroeder.
Not just going to talk about me.
No. I guess your general thoughts on Grady Summer League, because we talked to you beforehand and you did kind of like a scouting report on what you were seeing from him, but we saw it at the next level now, which is Summer League. And I'm looking forward to seeing it in preseason. But yeah, your general thoughts on what you saw.
I think the things that we talked about held true watching him play. Much more than a shooter, much more athletic than people think. Some really good finishes. There's one I really like. He has the spin move to like the up and under. He gets like the and one he falls down on.
Oh, he likes his spins.
Still the same thing I said. I would challenge his feet. You see him drifting some on the move. Shot it. He looks good. He looks comfortable shooting threes off the dribble in the pick and roll, though, which is good. Obviously, the percentages is whatever. Like, it's summer league. There's a lot of adjusting to do. I think I heard or read something he said that he was adjusting to the floor and the spacing and the different things and just the speed and athleticism of everybody. Even though he's coming out of college, there's still some guys that are more athletic at every position now and understanding your space, how much space you need to get your shot off. And it's going to go up again when he gets to the regular season. But I thought he moves well, plays with great pace, plays hard. Defensively, he's athletic enough to become an even better defender than I think we even think. But I think he's going to learn as he gets stronger because he's quick enough to cut guys off, not to like give so much. Like he's sliding and he's with guys on the angle, but then they're getting to points where they're just hitting him in the chest. There's like a couple times they got and ones and things like that. Those things could be times that he cuts people off because he's there. He just got to understand the tricks of the offensive players at this level.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has to get stronger when you're entering the NBA, but for someone like him, how much stronger do you want to get? Like, what's the balance between that?
So I think it's stronger, and people automatically think stronger and think bigger. I think it's much just stronger and in the positions that he needs to be in basketball wise. So like strengthening the core for certain things and being more efficient moving, which is getting stronger also. I think he needs to get bigger. I don't think he's weak by any means. I think he has the strength now to be able to play. It's just, you know, the understanding of the little things of the game he's going to try to bring into the NBA and the things he can work on with his movement and his technique that can help him. Especially as a shooter that wants to run and shoot on the move and put the ball on the floor, cut like he does. Oh, side note, he shot a sky hook.
I was going to mention that.
In summer league.
That happened. Yes.
Yes, he shot a sky hook. I had to bring that up. but no, yeah, and he shoots. He had a lot of twos like that he made, like pull-ups that look good in the mid-range area, things he can really get to, I think, because he's got good size. There's a lot of things, but I still think got to attack those feet. Like,
yeah.
I still think that's a thing, like just for his balance and to get him more efficient on his move. And I also think summer league is a hard gaze because guys play so fast and they're so hyped up. And it's like you know what I mean? Like he's not playing with other NBA guys. He's not playing with an all-star and a 10-year vet at center. And, you know what I mean? Like it's not the same thing either. So there's a lot of things that go into this.
In those first few games, and I mentioned this on a podcast the other day, we just did like a little brief look at his summer league performance, but obviously this is the more in-depth chatter that we're looking forward to. But I mentioned that in the first few games, those are the ones that I saw, he only shot like 13 or 12 field goals, but then the final two, he shot like 18 or 19.
He's getting them up.
Yeah, and I think he was probably
as
told
he should,
to.
Though.
And he was told
no,
to.
As he should. I think. Like that was one of the I
he's a first-round pick.
Yeah.
Get him off.
And I understand you trying to go in there, and that speaks to him as a person and a player too, wants to be a team player because he makes team plays, makes right passes, hustles for loose balls. He does things that complement the guys he's going to play with well, like the veteran guys and guys he's going to come into. He does things that help your team too. But in this setting, explore.
Yeah.
Like we're going to call plays for you. Handle it some more than you're probably going to get to, or let us see if we can trust you to handle it. You know, because if I can't trust you here at summer league, I definitely can't trust you when the season starts to handle the ball, right? So like let's build on this, and it's a confidence builder for you for the rest of your summer. You leave here being like, okay, I saw this, I saw that, take this away with some film, these are the type of plays they're running with me, now I can put that in the lab, now I can start working on those type things.
He seems like a natural athlete from some of the other clips I've seen. Like I saw his golf swing, beautiful. I saw him throw a football, absolutely immaculate. How does that connect into his shooting mentality, his shooting mechanics? Is there any connection there? Someone who's just like good at several different aspects of being an elite athlete.
I think being a fluid athlete just kind of, it just helps overall, like with, and it helps, I think it helps overall with learning to add things more so too at this point, because there's going to be a lot of things he's going to have to add and do. But I think it definitely just helps. Fluidity is a great thing to have at 6'8", playing the wing in the NBA, right? The other thing I wanted to mention also, speaking about his shooting, was his wrist. His wrist's not always down when he shoots. And I think some of that is from shooting fast. And you watch when his wrist is down, it's pure. But his wrist is not always down. It's like he's like pushing it a little bit and it ends up being flat. Because it's a lot of back rim or a lot of like off right or left, hard off the glass. Like it's like a push, like he didn't really. And I think that comes from, like I said, playing fast and being a little hyped up and being ultra aggressive and not really taking his time. But how could he take his time when he doesn't know yet?
And that's the funny part is that he actually missed a lot of his most open looks, but it was the harder ones that he made.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
That's true.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe because, obviously like there's ultra concentration when you're taking those tough shots. Right. So like you kind of go into this mode where you have to do everything right when you're taking the tough shot to even have a chance to make it.
Yeah,
and I think when you're getting open, you're just so happy that you're getting the open look. You kind of like fly through all the check marks, right? You watch him. Like I literally watch his wrist like ending like this when he's shooting the ball sometimes, which means the ball can only go like that. Like this is what gives it the flow, the arc, right? And a lot of his shots just they look flat. Like Even the one he missed to tie the game, that rims is just flat. Like, if there's arc on that ball, it's online, it falls in, that game's tied, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's a lot of things. And then the mid-range pull-ups, the ones he makes, you see when his wrist is down and the arc is up, they're cash, no rim. Like, but if you go watch a lot of the threes made, they're like hitting back, like hitting the back rim, falling in. Not there's nothing, sure. Makes a make, but I'm just saying for consistency.
Yeah, definitely. Like, there was the shot, that the little toilet thing, when he had the spin, and then he hit it and went around the rim a little bit. It's like Jarris Smith. Remember what he said? I prefer the tougher shots than the easier ones.
but Jarris Smith's a different animal.
He is. He absolutely is. It really did pop the shots he made through the pick and roll and through DHOs with Moses Brown, like using those step up screens, and he's coming off of it and he's hitting those pull up twos, pull up threes. And like, those are the kind of things that, those are the ones that you think, okay, so those could translate to the NBA pretty fast, considering he's going to be like the fifth option, fourth option, assuming the team that comes to the Raptors next season is the one that we're seeing right now.
And they just create opportunities for him to get downhill and get free throws and get himself into a rhythm. And because coming off the dribble like that, guys reacting to a shooter, they're coming at you. So now if we can get him one or two moves for downhill, that could just get him angles and get him, because he's a good enough athlete to go finish, or just to get him to the free throw line. Sure. And now we all know, like, shooters getting free throws early in games or at any point in the game helps with rhythm. So I think that's a big thing for him, having those that will allow him to – find himself in spaces that are just not him waiting on shots, right? Like, because that's hard sometimes when you're just waiting on shots to create a rhythm for yourself.
He was using that escape dribble to hit some pull-up twos. Like, it's like little things like that that he's aware of. And his feel for the game really stood out because of the progression we saw from game to game. Like, the earlier ones, I mean, he wasn't as much of an option. And also, we were talking about before we went on air, is that the Raptors are implementing a new system under a new coach. Like, this is like a different kind of level of feel it out, let's try things. And the first few games, they didn't have a lot of plays. It was a lot of high pick and roll with Marquise. And he had one game where he really popped, but the next one, they got trounced by the Cavaliers, who ended up winning the Summer League title. So now we know why they got trounced. That was a really good team. But as they went forward, I believe after that second game, they had a few days of practice. And then we're seeing more like stagger screens for Grady. We're seeing him be a bit of a screener. He's coming through, he's running off of screens, and he's hitting that sky hook that you mentioned. And those are all great flashes. The footwork you mentioned, how do you learn to glide more as a runner, as a shooter, as opposed to what I'm finding right now? It's still a little bit clunky. And it's like that half second of speed can make things a lot faster, and it creates an advantage for you as a shooter. How do you do that?
I think it goes into what he was talking about as far as like understanding the space and the rhythm and timing of the plays. You know what I mean? Like, it's just repetition, right? And understanding where you are on the floor and how you can get to a spot in two steps and what it takes to get to a spot in two or three steps, or where you like the screen set. Like I said, he's playing with new different people, sets being thrown in the day before the game. Cause I think a lot of times, like, they treat this like the season. So those guys aren't together that long. So they get in, they put in the defensive stuff first because they want you to be able to guard and communicate. And then offensively, they just kind of let it flow, figure it out, have a couple days of practice. Okay, we're going to throw this set in. It's kind of like training camp. Throw sets in as you go and just see what we can build on, because if we overload you and we got guys that's not going to remember plays. Like, you got to this is the fact. Like,
straight up.
They're veteran guys in the NBA that don't remember plays throughout season. Yeah. So I'm going to throw a playbook at a bunch of kids for summer league that have never been together. I can't do that, right? So I got to make it simple, and we just go off what we can work with. Like, that's the reality of this. We got to coach what we can. Like, give them what we can, and we can't overload everything.
You mentioned the feet or the bigger core. He had mentioned the bigger core too. Obviously, it changes things, but how does it change things for a shooter?
I don't think about it as the bigger court. I think about it I guess the bigger court goes in with the spacing. I think it changes how he has the space, and it changes your range. Because I know the biggest thing for me to extend my range was for the spacing, so I could give myself more opportunities. Because if I'm looked at as a shooter, I need to be able to shoot that ball off that line some, especially from the standstill, because people are the line of defense is going to be at that line.
Yeah.
And also the more spacing I can give my players that because I can shoot from there, the less crowds we have for drivers and post-up players and things like that. So I think just adjusting to that, and that's why the arc's got to change on this shot a little bit, because you can't shoot those flat from that distance, right? So I think he's just got to understand, he's going to learn to understand where guys like to operate as he plays in the regular season, which will change his spacing again. So it's harder with guys that you're playing with that you don't really know, because I don't know what he likes to do. I met him 3 days ago. We don't have any plays, so I'm not told where to be. I just have to kind of flow.
The range seems okay. He hit that shot against the Warriors where he goes to the screen and then he just turned right into this pull up three, which is from like around the 45, the deepest part of the 3-point line. I'm like, okay, so you're feeling good. You're good.
He can do it. It's the thing. He has the mechanics and the strength and the ability to be able to do that consistently. It's just about drilling it and understanding the things that can make it easier. I think he's a little upright sometimes coming off of stuff. So like he's shooting stuff without as much power that he could have. Which is causing it to be flat because the legs aren't into it. And we also don't know what they did for our training camp to get ready for summer league. Because I know my first summer league, the training camp going into that, the first two games, my legs were shot because I was gassed. Like,
You haven't played in a long time.
And you go something. We were doing 2-a-days during the training camp for summer league when I did it. I don't know if they're doing that now. I don't know. But like, you're playing in those practices too. So it's not like, you're just showing up to play in an AAU tournament. These are also guys still learning how to condition for what they're going into. You can do all the conditioning you want and go do workouts. It doesn't substitute for you getting in that game and playing at that speed with that adrenaline and with that crowd and putting on that NBA jersey for the first time, man. Or at least somewhat of an NBA jersey.
Yeah, we're getting there. Preseason, he'll have one. I want to touch on something you said there, but when both times that I walked into the practice ballroom that they had at the hotel, they were doing yoga. They were doing stretches, which I mean, sometimes like when we walk in, we always end up going into the practice facilities or that the media availability is like right at the tail end. And sometimes we're just doing shooting or whatever. But on the first day they were doing shooting, and then the next two practices, it was, they were doing stretches. They were doing yoga. And also Darko was participating.
Of course.
Good for him. Yeah.
Keep it, get in the trenches with the players.
On court coach.
But let's stick to the yoga. Let's not get out there and try to do too many things and get him hurt. That speaks to them trying to, what I'm saying, they've probably been going hard at it for 2 weeks now, and they're just trying to preserve their bodies to get ready for the games they still got to play. Because we're still in a tournament, right? And you still want to compete and you want to win. So you start laying the foundation for teaching guys how to take care of their body, you know? It's still teaching points on that too with this.
So conditioning for him as a shooter. Now, obviously there's progression is needed from that standpoint. But how do you do that? Like if you were to be taking him to CJ's shooting lab, I know you're going to attack the foot. I thought you'd like that. CJ's shooting lab sponsored by Masfresco.
CJ's last sponsor.
It's going to be footwork and it's going to be, I assume, conditioning. But specifically, how are you doing that?
Just game shooting, right? Setting goals for certain numbers, like, and they got to be at game speed. Making sure he's getting hit while he's running off the screens. Making sure we make everything as much like the game as we can, like. To this day, when I go in the gym and I do stuff and I work out with guys sometimes, like, because I feel like I'm better working out and demonstrating and talking it through and feeling it through than I am just pointing my finger. Like, I do that also to show the type of speed that this should be done at. Because that's the only way we're going to be able to get to this. Like the stories you hear about Steph Curry. Yeah. They said players come to work out with him in 10 minutes is who they throw up. It's the reason why he's the best conditioned basketball player besides him and LeBron have been the best conditioned basketball players of all time. I've never looked at Steph Curry and like, man, he looks tired tonight. Never. Not once.
Like, and if you do, then he just all of a sudden splashes a three from...
exactly, and then all of a sudden it's like boom 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 boom. You know what I mean? Like, Steph's not really engaged, and it's like, oh my god. So I mean, like, but I think the biggest thing is like the to understand how to keep everything intact at that speed. So we have to practice at that speed. When we get in the game, I don't need the elbow flying off out of pocket and the wrist not going down because you get a little tired, or because mm-hmm. most things happen when fatigue sets in. I had a bad habit of my elbow drifting out when I got tired. So when the summer came, we had to drill everything to the point until I was tired, and then I could start getting better.
Yeah.
Because I could walk in the gym right now fresh and make 10, 15 shots in a row. But if we start playing 5-on-5 and start getting hit, start having to guard somebody, start having to come off a screen and get chased and get pulled on, now we talk about those fundamental things flying out the window. So that's where we attack in the workouts. Like, we got to challenge you in all types of ways to get you to a point where there's a line of when you start to kind of drift concentration-wise. And now we start getting better. So we might not start getting better till like 30 minutes into the workout. Everything else is just getting ready. It's just getting you primed. Like,
can you just do like 12 suicides and all right, let's do our workout.
Yeah, but then like now I can't keep you engaged. You know what I mean? Like now you're just mad. Like now you're just mad at me because I made you run. like you know what I mean? So like I might as well like do the work on all the other things. There's so many ways of conditioning. And I don't run straight lines the whole game. So like to condition only in a straight line manner is a disservice to him too. Because yeah, you conditioned to run from baseline to baseline, but are you conditioned to run at a curve? Are you conditioned to break down, make a stop and go? Are you conditioned that way? So
that's true. Stop and go. It's a different nature within an offensive system, especially as a movement shooter. Like you're stopping and going three different times in one sequence, right?
Yeah, and that's his thing too. His pace is gonna have to. His learning of change of pace is going to be the next thing that's going to come with that. Because, yeah, going hard and flying off things all the time is a great thing to have and a great attribute. But at some point, you're going to have to be able to throw defenses off balance. You're going to have to be able to, like, just get guys off you, right? So I think that's something that's going to come with time, too.
That's tricky, too. Like, I mentioned the Staker screens, a play design that they had during Summer League. But, like, what if there's a switch and all of a sudden it didn't work? And now you have to keep on running. You got to keep on going.
You got to figure out what to do. Yeah. You got to figure out. That's the other thing about conditioning. I need that mind to be able to still flow and be creative when you're tired, too. Because the first thing that happens when you get tired is the mind goes. That's why people forget plays and forget defensive assignments and start looking at the bench like, ah, what happened? No, you're just tired. so we need you to be so well conditioned that nothing, there's no drop offs. At least none of these control.
Yeah. When you get run off the line as a shooter, do you need to have do you decide that you're going to, create two or three go-tos in those moments? And then you're surveying the second level of defense to decide what you want to do, because you can't do too much. You can't practice too many things, because then rather than being good at a few things, you're kind of okay at five things.
I think you just kind of sharpen two or three.
Yeah.
As a shooter, like I don't need to be able to, in those situations, dance with the ball really, because it's such a quick decision.
Yeah.
And so once I see you flying at me crazy, like I'm not even looking at you no more. I'm looking at what's behind you because you're done. Like you're.
It's like over.
Yeah. You're either already getting ready to jump or you're so out of control running at me that you can't stay in front of me without fouling me. So the next thing is to see the next level of defense, to see, obviously right or left, like which way I'm reading your feet as you're coming, and then you sharpen the pull-ups, I think, off of that, or the side steps, because if you're running fast and you're thinking, and they're not going to close short, so it's like a flyby or if it's an attack, that's what the first thing you got to assess. And then is to it, am I getting to a floater, am I getting to a pull-up, is the big down there a good rotator, is he going to be there when I get by this guy? These type of things that kind of roll through the mind. But I think you sharpen the pull-up going both ways. For him, I think he can sharpen his step back. I think that's a good thing for him to have because of his size and athleticism.
Yeah.
But I think you just figure out ways to attack it and understand that your eyes are a pump fake now when you're a shooter with space. So I have even more time because I don't even have to get that ball above my head. I just have to hold it in the position of shooting and look at that rim when a guy's off my body.
Gravity, baby. That's gravity.
It's gravity. I don't remember. Well, I know there's times that obviously you pump fake head ball over your shoulders, but in rotation, the pump fake never comes up.
Yeah.
Like I just literally would like look at the rim. And then I would be on my way. So that's half a step now I got.
Yeah. He was using his pump fakes a lot more in those last few games. And pump and go. And then we're seeing the other skills, his complementary skills, getting to the rim, the pull-up twos, the kick-out passes. Those were really flowing. And in the early portions of Summer League, it wasn't a lot of that. And that could just be him, his comfort, whatever. Probably everyone getting acclimated to each other. But that's when he started to use those. That's when we started to see the other facets of his game. And it's what you're talking about. You don't need that many. You just need a couple and perfect them.
He's got potential to be like Gordon Hayward type of all-around player. Like without the – obviously, we don't wish the injuries on anybody, and I don't wish the injuries on G-Town. Shout out to G-Town. But like Gordon is super talented. I think we kind of like forgot that because of like all the injuries and in and out of things. But like he's got potential to go out there and average 16-6 in the summer league without other NBA players, without really a lot of things really in his favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Besides like obviously being the first round pick and being able to just shoot every time, but I mean as far as like playing wise, no disrespect to the guys he's playing with, but he's not playing with the best guys. You're not playing with the everything's new. There's a lot of things. Everybody's trying, and you got all the other guys trying to make the team, so they got their own agenda that's going on too.
Sure.
But I think he has the potential to be very solid defensively, put the ball on the floor some. He can learn to make reads. He doesn't have to be a flashy passer, just make the right passes. Learn to read defensive rotations and make shots. I think he's got the size for and athleticism for all of that.
Yeah. I always found Kawhi was like that. He doesn't make flashy passes, but he knows where the ball has to go. When he sees that second level or second defender, he knows exactly where the ball has to end up. On the NBA, and as he transitions to that and playing alongside players who have their own gravity, who have their own skill set, who, and as I mentioned earlier, he's going to be the fourth, third option, whatever, assuming the current team we see, they have one more roster spot open, but assuming everyone comes to training camp, wherever it is in Canada, he's going to be the third, fourth option, right? So how does that change what he's going to be able to do on the court? And also, how do you build chemistry with a big? Because you and I talked about this before, is that like having that that kind of Kyle Korver, Paul Millsap, Al Horford connection where you're a step up screen away, or you're like a relocation, changing the screening angle away from an open three. How do you do that?
I think the biggest thing is you guys understanding how you reward each other and how me being open obviously eventually ends up being a role for you and vice versa. So we understand how we can work for each other, understand that we're weapons for each other. Right. So the big understands that him screening for me.
Hiring for your small business. If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Gets him the easiest of looks and vice versa. So... and I have to be willing to be able to make the right reads. Nobody, if I'm just going to shoot it every time I come off of there, like no matter what, then it's not rewarding for anybody because we don't get the right plays, the right looks made. But like being able to make the pocket passes, being able to understand the angles, or being able to notice sometimes how they're playing it, that you might be coming to screen for me and I just decided to screen for you last second, back screen, or do something different because of where they're playing it. Like just understanding and playing the game and understanding that we are a tandem. It's not, you come get me so I can shoot a three, or I'm coming over there just so I can slip it because I know the big wants to show. There's got to be some real contact and some real screen set and some real like work just put in of rhythm and timing and understanding. He likes lobs. This one likes pocket passes. And if it's, it can't,
it's like a point guard kind of.
It turns into that. Yeah. And that's essentially, so like I used to always say like the dribble handoff was like me being in a pick and roll. That's the way I used to use it. Or like screen and rails is my versions of pick and rolls. Like it was the same type of read a lot of times because I would get the show because of me being able to shoot it. And I had to make the read if I could see his whole chest, and that ball had to get out of my hands as fast as possible. If he was kind of there and he was flat, it was a couple dribbles to see if he was going to stay or not, and then we get downhill. If nobody was there, then it's gone before it gets to my hands, right?
Yeah.
But, I think you just learn the reads just like anything else.
Mm. Anything else on Grady? We've covered quite a bit here.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else that
I think he had a great I think he had a great show, and I think he's got tremendous potential, right? I think that those feet, man, like he attacks those and just attacks his rhythm and how he gets himself into his shots. It's not that he can't do it. Like, and when I say break him down, when I break stuff down, it's not breaking him down because he doesn't do it. It's breaking it down to make it as sharp as he can.
Yeah.
And to show the reasonings for every little movement and why. I think a lot of times people tell guys and dudes in the gym, you got to get your hip around. Well, why? Like, show me, make me understand why and what's the reasoning for it so I can connect it with my mind and the reasoning so I can understand where you keep shooting off right or you keep being short and you're telling me it's because of, you're giving me three things. Well, tell me how they correlate. And that's the reason for you breaking everything down one by one by one. Attack the feet, attack the hips, attack the low, and attack everything in the paint. Attack the wrist being down, attack. Because then when I show you with your wrist being down consistently, how this shot from 45 now from a standstill is butter. It's not even a waste. It's not, it's so much less energy got to be used.
Yeah.
Like, damn. Steph shoots the ball like he does so effortlessly because his mechanics has been drilled into him so well. And he's done the repetition. It might not be textbook for everybody where they teach it, but for him, he talks about his feet. He talks about if he's down and he's in a certain position, everything else just flows right off. Ray Allen talked about shooting with his whole body.
Yeah.
Like, that's what makes the range and the arc on Steph's shot. The arc equals distance, right? So, like, it comes through his whole body and that ball goes up. He shoots from half court like he shoots free throws.
I've never heard that before. Steffortlessly?
Yeah, they say beautiful. It on TNT. They say it on TNT.
That's beautiful.
That's what the guy said. They call it Steffortless.
Anyone ever call you C. Trey Miles?
No.
No?
Actually, not to just right now.
It seems pretty.
I got three. I used to get 3J.
3J? Yeah, that makes sense.
That's,
yeah. C. Trey Miles. I kind of like that. It's kind of clunky. C. Trey Miles.
Yeah, it takes a little while. Then roll off. Makes sense, but then roll up. But I think there's so much that goes into. Like we talked to the artist shooting, right? It's an art form to it. It's an art form to every position and the things they do. Like, and I think when, one of the greatest compliments I got from somebody when they actually talked basketball with me was them, they watched basketball and they felt like they watched it for a long time and they understood it. But then when they talked to a guy who played it for a long time and has broken all these things down and done all these things, they realized how much of an art and how much tactic really written into this. Like they don't look at it just as like you go in there and get your shots up and then you go play and then you like, no, this is something that's been studied in film and I'm still learning things right now that are useful when I'm in the gym with kids and people and other players that I work out with. Anything I can give, I give. I still go in the backyard and just tinker and just mess around and like envision it like I'm 6 years old doing countdowns and like what would I do if they did this or that. Because it's like a everlasting thing, like to chase the mastering of something, right?
Yeah. It's a weird pivot now. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, super cool.
I was trying to think of something to relate to Dennis Schroeder, but I'm not really sure. We're going to talk about Dennis Schroeder.
So, speaking of basketball.
Speaking of being cool. Sure, let's go
Dennis
with that.
Schroeder is very
cool. He is a cool guy. He seems like a cool guy. So this man has played for a lot of different NBA teams, and that's not a bad thing, right? OKC, Atlanta, two different stops in LA with the Lakers, Boston, where you guys played together but kind of didn't, and also Houston, as you told COVID. Me. I mean, COVID. Yeah, I'll let COVID. You describe what went down.
Yeah, so it was during the heat of COVID. I mean, really, I got the 10-day because of COVID, right? Like, that's how I got there. And then, you know, practice was so crazy, and it was even on greater high alert when I was in Boston because they had a Christmas game. So like they couldn't allow that to happen where they wouldn't have enough players to play the Christmas game. Because remember, games were getting canceled and there were so many guys, man. It was like the replacements, right? Like the movie, right? Like guys were just – because they had to get replacements too. It was a good movie. Yeah. So we were there on 10 days, and then they had to get replacements for us because we got COVID too. So, like, there was, like, guys on double 10 days. It was a wild time. Like, but, yeah, so, like, we conversed a couple times, but we didn't really get to spend time together.
But he was cool.
But he was cool, yeah. But we're talking about basketball anyway, so.
Yes. Well, I mean, yes and no, because he was brought in, I mean, as he pointed out, to be a bit of a leader with the Raptors.
This is true.
Yeah, and we, I mean, the Raptors have lost Fred VanVleet, and Thad Young is still under contract there. But, I mean, even that's still a bit of a
shout out to Thad.
Too. Yeah, love Thad, man.
Shout out to Thad.
Yeah, he's man, legendary person. Legendary basketball. Just the range of his basketball career from where it started to where he is now and just his journey overall. It's a testament to his work ethic and the person he is that he's been able to do it for this long.
I got to tap in with him next time I'm in the city. I haven't seen him in a while.
Bring him on the pod. Jeez, come on now.
Oh, yeah. We could do
Bring him on the pod. That'd be a great conversation. You guys going back and forth. You guys both preaching back and forth, me just watching. It was like the Fred thing, too. You guys were just going back and forth. I'm like, this is cool.
Yeah, I'll ask him for sure. Yeah, I asked him.
Yeah. Parallels I see between Fred and Dennis Schroeder is that they've worn a lot of different hats in their NBA careers. Because you look at his time in Atlanta, he was off the bench for a long time. Then he became the starting point guard. Mm-hmm. And then he shifts to OKC. He's a sixth man. And he almost won sixth man, actually. In the year that Montrezl Harrell won it, Dennis Schroeder finished second. And then he goes to LA. There's point guard play, but he's also playing off ball a lot because of LeBron James and all that kind of stuff. So, but obviously they're very different players. So with Fred gone and Dennis coming in, what are the Raptors getting from maybe the starting point guard? I'm not sure if he is going to start or not, but he might.
Yeah. I mean, he brings obviously like he showed last year in the playoffs. He's really committed to the defensive end, right? He can guard the ball, and he's good off ball with chasing guys and keeping his bodies on guys. Got good hands. He competes. Like, that's the first thing you would love to have at the point of attack, right, with the guy that's guarding the ball, somebody who really wants to get after it and really wants to compete. Yeah. Shown he can shoot the ball over his career. I think he's really good standstill. He has capabilities of that. Good penetrator, good floaters, good finisher. Like, you know, he can push the pace. He can play up and down. Makes reads. I think there's nice, like anybody has his lapses decision making, like, you know, because he gets playing fast sometimes, but I think he makes really good reads, solid reads, and I think the role change heightens that when you know you're coming into a space where you're looked at as being a leader and a guy who's trying to teach guys the way, you really carry that with you. So, like, there's less chances taken with things, you know what I mean? Just you want to make sure you get guys to understand we're trying to make the right plays and build. But like you say, he's worn a lot of different hats. Like, he's had a great career. He's shown he can score a lot of points when he's needed to. He's shown, like we said, he can take the defensive spot up shooter role. He brings in a lot. Like, and obviously him and the coach have a history, so it's somebody coach can trust and kind of like be a extension of him as they're trying to put in new things and get the players to trust his coach. And you got a player that's proven in the league vouching for your guy.
Yeah. That means something too, that as soon as the Fred thing got finalized, I mean, both parties, Darko was like, we got to get Dennis, and Dennis was like, I'm coming to Toronto. Right. Yeah. That means something. And it kind of shows like the connection that Darko does have with some of the players. So I'm excited to see how that turns out, not just with Dennis, but with other players as he looks to build with them. On-ball defense obviously is pretty pivotal in the NBA. And I kind of go back and forth with this aspect that, like, it's so hard to guard someone one-on-one these days, but having someone capable at the point of attack who can limit like the first option within an offensive set is really important.
It's like you said, it's really hard, right? Like, one, the rules in place, two, guys knowing the rules and manipulating the rules, right? And then just on top of that, being tremendously talented,
sure,
offensive scorers and guys who just really know how to manipulate the ball and the game and the referees and angles and things of that nature. So, but I think having a guy, like you said, that can make it tough and make guys have to make multiple moves and decisions and really make it hard to break them down I think it changes everything, especially when all these guards that come into your arena now are these shoot first, attack guards. Like making it hard on them and not letting them have rhythm early in games really helps.
So he's passed on the ball, active hands, screen navigation is obviously superb. And we saw that. I mean, look at who he guarded in the playoffs, this past playoffs. It was like he went through a lot. Mike Conley in the play-in game. Then he got Steph Curry. And there's another series in there, too. But it's challenging. And he's able to do that. And then you think of the skills that he has just as a mover, an off-ball player. Yeah. I'm curious how the Raptors do end up using him, because Darko has alluded to, you know, Scottie having the ball in his hands a lot. Okay, well, then there's Dennis Schroeder, and that's why we're not really sure what the starting lineup's going to be at the moment. You would think it's Dennis, OG, Pascal, Scottie Barnes, and Jakob Poeltl, but you could see Dennis coming off the bench, and maybe it's Gary Trent Jr. Like, it's stuff like that. I don't know. But whatever it is, you would think that he's going to be doing his job regardless. Yeah,
he's a compliment to the team. Like, he's a compliment to what you're trying to do, what you're trying to build. I think he's a good pickup for what the situation they're in and what he can bring. And then, like you said, that biggest thing that we got to talk about, though, is him having that relationship with that new coach. And one, had the coach having someone to make him feel comfortable and confident to coach stepping in, because that first year we know how it can be for guys sometimes. Sure. Especially when you got a team that's got a history and not just last year, but just has a history of winning, and then the ups and downs, and you got all the stigmas that are going to be thrown at you to fix right away. Mm. And that's really unfair, right? Like, it's really unfair to ask somebody to, like, it's like when we elect the president in the States, right? Like, yeah, fix everything right now. Like, one, he don't even make all the rules. He don't even do all the things. Two, he just got here. Like, the other guy was here for multiple years. Give me a second. Like, right? I think it's good to have somebody with you that can help relay you and stand for you and show that you've accomplished some things and worth believing in.
So three-point shooting, we know, has been a problem for the Raptors. And then you think, okay, now Fred VanVleet's gone, and you bring in Dennis Schroeder, who career-wise hasn't been the best shooter. But his time in OKC, and the first season he shot 34%? And that was the year he was coached by Darko. The second season, he was a career high 39%, if you want to round up, on five attempts per game. That is the season that Chris Paul was there. I'm curious, how does that translate for a player? Like, why is it that some players can shoot really well in some spots and not so well in another one? Because also, five attempts per game was his career high too. Five, so it's role, and also amount. Kind of, yeah, that's a lot.
I think it's the type of shots, the spacing, the type of spaces you're putting in. Maybe the plays allowed him to be in the spaces that he really shot the ball well. There could have been more corner threes. There could have been more slot threes, shorter threes. You know what I mean? It could have been the way he got them, less of them off the dribble and off the move, like more standstill, more just rhythmic timing, the passes he's getting. Like, maybe that year he was getting those passes from Chris Paul and they were right on the money, you know? Like, it could have been so many things, but I think confidence also rolls into that too, with a coach that you like and a coach that believes you and they put you in positions to succeed. Like, I think that plays a big role also. And especially, say you've been asked as a task to be a better shooter for this team. Like, we need you to be that. That goes into the mindset of your preparation too, I think. Not that people don't want to be better shooters, but when you've been dubbed the role of, I need you to be a three-point shooter for this team to be successful, that being on the forefront of your mind really changes the way you approach the game.
Sure. And I would imagine that conversation is taking place with him and the Toronto Raptors too, because they do need him to be a pretty damn good shooter. And I looked at the stats the other day, just wanted to verify it, that he did shoot extremely well from the corner three in that season with Chris Paul. So there you go. That does.
And that's being
correlate.
Off the ball, right? So
yeah.
But I think it's something that I think he always had the ability to do it, though. I think it's just like you said, it's been circumstance sometimes, and I think we don't talk about that all the time because we're like, obviously you're a professional, you got to figure it out, you got to do your job, you got to figure it out. But like, still plays a role. But he's shown the potential to be so many things over his career, and we're stepping into a situation where this team could benefit from him being a little bit of all those things. So maybe this is the spot that literally gives him like 3 years of like bringing all of that out. I don't know how long this deal is. I just made up a number, but like him just bringing all of that out and falling into that. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how old he is, but I know he's pretty healthy still. I don't think he's that old. So
turning 30 in September.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got plenty of good years left in him. I don't believe in the age thing anyway. I think it's, you know, as long as you take care of yourself, you can play for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's, I mean, this is a guy, like we said, he's played a long time, done some winning. He's big.
Yeah. You go back to his Atlanta days, and that's when he was like the starting point guard for them in the season.
And we got to remember too, speaking of Atlanta days, that he was the reason they felt like they could let Jeff Teague go.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jeff Teague was an all-star guard in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So that tells you how good he was playing and his upside of where he was headed, where they felt like that could even happen. Shout out to Jeff Teague too. That's my man. I played with him in Indiana. Not saying they pushed him. I'm just saying like when it was time to make a decision, they felt like he was good enough to replace an all-star point guard on a team that was really, really, really good.
And in that final season with Atlanta, he shot 43%, 29% from three on four attempts, 19 points, and six assists. So those are pretty good numbers. I mean, the three-point percentage, not the best, but you look at 19 and six on 43% for someone his size at 6'1", that's pretty good numbers for a starting point guard.
And younger guys with his skill set at that time usually build into their three-point shot. Like, he didn't need to shoot threes then. Nobody could stay in front of him at that time. I remember this time. He was a handful. Like, nobody was standing in front of him.
I mean, can they now? Like, it's not easy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But obviously, at this time, he's super fast, right? Not that he's not now, but, like, you're coming in with the mindset of this fearless mentality and no cares about hitting the floor, no cares about space and whatever. I just come off the bench and do my job. Like, I go wreak havoc. And he was just doing whatever he wanted.
That's a tricky question that Darko has to answer. And Dennis had alluded to maybe being the starting point guard during his availability. He kind of said it, and then someone, you know, asked him again, like, wait, did Darko say you're going to be starting point guard? He's like, oh, no, I mean, whatever is required of me. He may have spilled the beans. I don't know. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But we just went through the lineups, right? It's it could be Dennis, OG, Pascal, Scotty, and Yak, or it could be Dennis coming off the bench and then Gary Trent Jr. But when you think of that lineup, what's your feeling on it? Because it's pretty similar to what we had last season, obviously, taking out, you know, Fred and inserting Dennis. But it's a different look for sure. And spacing could still be a problem. But at the same time, you have paint touches galore with Dennis Schroeder. And he is a pick and roll point guard. He has a floater. He's operated like that before with Clint Capella, obviously, in Atlanta and also later on in his career. And he had some great games with the Lakers this past few seasons too, where he's, you know, LeBron's out, AD's out, he goes and cooks. So,
I still think you like too much shooting in that lineup.
You do.
I think it's too hard. And like we talk about paint touches will start to dwindle when there's no spacing.
Mm-hmm.
So like over time, teams will start to adjust to the way they're going to play and the schemes they're going to use. And we're just going to. Or we're going to invite paint touches and collapse and make you kick out the guys that we don't think can beat us from the three-point line.
Yeah.
Now we got a whole nother problem. We got a bunch of guys taking eight threes a night and shooting 30%.
Sounds like last season.
So, and that's not to say that I don't believe in those guys being able to make threes and that they can't get better. But I'm just going off of the information I have, which is those guys don't want to. First of all, they don't even want to shoot eight threes a game. None of those guys want to. So, like, they're going to be hesitant in taking shots even when they're open because it's not their game, right? But you need that spacing and you need that threat for the sets you want to run.
Yeah.
You need that threat to make things work and to be able to slip screens and that, you got guys just switching everything and backing up and keeping you in front of them and playing on the elbows. And now it looks like a college team's playing defense with no spacing out there, which leads to turnovers and – so there's a lot of things that go into that. Like, I'm not saying the lineup doesn't get used. I think it's hard to be your primary lineup, though.
Yeah. Yeah, and also Darko, from everything we're seeing, especially in Summer League 2, that he likes using a lot more high ball screens, like, you know, well above the level, just to get the defense extended a little bit. But at the same time, again, teams can game plan for that unless you have a point guard who can hit that pull-up three. That changes everything.
And, That too. And then, like you said, if you want to play in that space and like that with no shooters, then the big doesn't go up there. Everybody's on the elbows when he comes off the pick and roll, turns the corner, and we're going to dare you to shoot that shot.
Yeah.
Like, you can shoot pull-up threes all you want. I know you don't want to shoot it, or you're going to come down here, head down into us with the help and the big at the rim.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's the way they want to play. I don't think anybody wants to play that way.
Nope. With the Lakers last season, he played the second most clutch minutes of their team, and he was a plus 58 in that time. And you just think of his competition, stuff he did with Draymond Green. Like, he's a pesky dude, and he's going to get into people, and he's a good addition from that standpoint. He's going to keep things very competitive. But I'm not really sure about the fit from the standpoint of if he's your point guard and Yak, as talented as he is and as Dennis is your big, that's not a lot of reliable three-point shooting. But like you said, I mean, if Dennis is told X, Y, and Z, he's been in the league for a long time, we got to give him the benefit of the doubt, especially when we look at some of the numbers that he has done. Like, he did, in fact, shoot 39% from three not too long ago. So that is something, but they're going to need
I think you give guys the opportunity, right? You present them with something. It was like, if you can do this lineup, because if he can do that, and OG, who has shot good percentages, but you don't think of him as a moving shooter, right? And you can get Scotty and Pascal to make their standstills, then we change everything. Then things change. And then we bring the moving shooter off the bench. We bring Grady and Gary Trent Jr. off the bench, and we got a whole other dynamic off that with speed and pace that they will play at. So things could work, because, I mean, it worked that way for the team I was on. They didn't have a guy like me in the first unit. Kyle can make threes, though, but because Kyle can make the pull-up three and the spot-up three, then that it allowed the lineup to work, right? And then you got Serge, you can make some occasionally. DeMar wasn't going to shoot him, but, like, DeMar was DeMar, right?
Yeah.
So I think there's ways to make things work, but some guys have got to be able to take a step up in a little space.
Yeah. And I would have been curious to see what Fred would have looked like in a Darko system too, because from everything that we are gathering about it, it's the high ball screens, which, I mean, he's been a capable pull-up three-point shooter, but also it's just like the timing and the reads that have to be made. It's supposed to be very fast. It's a 0.5 system. That's like the trendy term that we're hearing about. And, you know, the starting lineup that I mentioned, it does have a lot of smart, high IQ basketball players. So that's going to help. And when it comes to, you know, getting the schemes and keeping things right and making smart cuts and reading the defenses, they're going to do that. But it still always goes back to the question of, but do you have enough shooting? And I don't know. We don't know.
And in the NBA, that's the question everybody asks every day, right?
Yeah.
At this point in time, the way the games play is like, do we have enough shooting? And the last thing you need is like, guys shooting threes that shouldn't be shooting threes.
Yeah.
Because now that whole style of play becomes detrimental. Yeah. Right?
So you got Jalen McDaniels coming off the bench. You got Otto Porter Jr. Hopefully he stays healthy.
Who can shoot it also.
Yep. Hopefully he stays healthy. We don't really know what the update is, but he's expected to be ready for training camp is the only thing that we've kind of heard, I believe. You got Precious, who's looking to rebound. You got Chris Boucher. Christian Coloco is Christian Coloco is expected, I would think, is the backup center at this point. And they still have one regular roster spot available, along with two ways. And Jeff Doughton Jr. does not currently have a contract, but he's been with the team a lot. Okay. A lot. He's been around the team constantly. The ongoing, like, funny thing going on is that he's always in the background of things and he's practicing. And that happened again and again in Summer League. And also, even when Darko was Grady Dick was introduced at OVO, he was again in the background practicing. So he's around. He did have offseason surgery, but he seems to be okay. And he didn't participate in Summer League. I can't remember. I had to look it up. But he didn't play in Summer League for that very reason, but we'll see. That's kind of the end of this is that we're going to see.
I would like to see him get picked up.
I mean, there's one regular roster spot available.
And two.
They have the option. And two two-ways.
If you're scared of the injury and he's going to need to go down to rehabilitate and all that, give him a two.
Then why are we giving him a two?
No, I'm just saying if we're in a boat with the rehab and he's going to have to go play and do this stuff to get back right, and you want to keep him still, give him a two-way. I'm not saying I don't – I would like him to have a regular roster spot too. I'm just saying if that's what you're scared of, I'm not a front office person. I'm just speaking on trying to make it make sense. And one thing we know about the NBA is everything does not always have to make sense. They do things just to they operate differently, right?
Oh, yeah.
So at least to make sense from this side of that fence.
Yeah.
The way they make sense is not the same way we make sense.
He had loose bodies removed from his right ankle. I didn't know there were bodies and ankles. Had no idea. I mean, he's running around. He was practicing. He was doing some movement, jump shooting. Like I would think he's going to be okay for training camp. So that's kind of it. That was Grady. That was Dennis Schroeder. That was a conversation. Rate, review, and subscribe on your podcast platforms.
Click every button that you can. I just kicked the camera. Sorry.
That's okay.
But rate, subscribe, comment. Like we said, all the internet stuff. Repost it. Yeah. Send it to your friends in a text. Send it to your mom when she's driving to work.
And listen to.
No. We're talking about the podcast right now.
Okay, fine.
But you can listen to my Espresso when you're not listening to Baby.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not listening to CJ. You don't listen to CJ talk about basketball. Listen to my Espresso when you listen to the music. You know, like I heard that guy's decent. But other than that, you know, you guys be good. You have a great day.
Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.